Strategic thinking is a skill that you can use to move ahead more rapidly towards your goals than you ever believed possible. It's an incredibly powerful tool that's used by organizations large and small all over the world to help them maximize their potentials and realize their possibilities. It can be an equally powerful method when used by any individual to help him or her realize their full potential for successful living in both personal and financial achievement. When corporations do strategic planning, the whole purpose of the exercise is to enable the corporation to increase its return on equity, called ROE. It's to enable the organization to allocate and reallocate its resources so as to ensure the highest possible return on capital invested in the enterprise. Strategic planning for corporations aims at increasing profitability, on increasing the amount of output per unit of input. It revolves around identifying opportunities for the future and then systematically moving people and resources from areas of lower productivity to areas of higher productivity. Personal strategic planning for yourself is very similar. Only in this case, your aim is to increase your return on energy rather than your return on equity. In fact, your personal equity is human capital rather than financial capital. What you have to invest and allocate is your mental, emotional, and physical energy, more than anything else. Strategic thinking enables you to channel and direct your energies so that they give you the greatest return on the investment of your time or your life. By using personal strategic planning and by practicing strategic thinking, you allocate your time and your life so that you get more joy, more satisfaction, and greater rewards from everything you do. Not long ago, several very successful men and women sat around a large table where they discussed the reasons for success and the reasons for failure. They'd been involved jointly in the production of many books and audio tape programs on success, and among them they had known many of the most successful people in America. After considerable discussion, they came to the conclusion that success is goals, and all else is commentary. They concluded that the ability to set goals and to make plans for their accomplishment was more important than any other single skill. They agreed that the ability to think strategically about one's life was the critical skill for high achievement and greater levels of satisfaction. Napoleon Hill, author of Think and Grow Rich, once wrote, "Anything that the mind of man can conceive and believe, it can achieve." Of course, this doesn't mean that you can leap buildings in a single bound, but it does mean that there are virtually no limitations on you when you know exactly what you want to accomplish and when you have written it down and made a plan for its achievement. This truism is generally recognized by most people, even though very few people apply it to their lives. Some time ago, I wrote an article for the National Employment Weekly. They took one sentence out of the text and blew it up into big letters. It said, "Those who do not have goals are doomed forever to work for those who do." You can either work to achieve your own goals, or you can work to achieve the goals of someone else. Ideally, when you work for another company, the accomplishment of your company's goals should lead to the accomplishment of your own. But in any case, it's always the same. There may be exceptions to this principle, but you can't count on them. Strategic thinking is the methodology by which you bring your mental powers to bear on every area of your life to ensure that you operate with maximum efficiency and effectiveness toward the accomplishment of your particular goals. Strategic thinking is a rare quality possessed by less than 1% of the population, but in my experience, it can be more helpful than almost any other thinking skill that you can develop. The strategic thinking process begins with your standing back and taking a long look at your life. You think about where you are now and where you want to be in the future. And since everything in life is from the inside out, you begin your process of strategic thinking, as corporations do, by thinking about and clarifying your values. Values clarification is one of the most important of all exercises. When you decide upon your values, which are the principles that you absolutely believe in and will not compromise, you lay the foundations for a life strategy that enables you to move ahead more rapidly than ever before. All successful people are very clear about what they value and believe in, what they stand for, and especially what they will not stand for. Unsuccessful people, on the other hand, are very fuzzy about their values and often have no values at all. If they've given any thought to their values, they're ready to compromise on them at any time for short-term gain. Your job with regard to values is to decide very clearly. True values are engraved in stone. They are inviolable. You either have a value or you don't have it. You cannot have a value partially, just like you can't be a little bit pregnant. You can't have a value some of the time and not at other times. You cannot have situational values or expedient values, which are determined by the demands of the current situation. If there's any area of your life where you must be steadfast and true, where you are to be the best person you can possibly be, it is in the area of your values. For example, if you say that integrity is one of your values, what you are really saying is that you will never do anything that is not perfectly upright and honest in each and every area of your life. You will always tell the truth. You will always be honest in all your dealings with other people. You will undergo pain, sacrifice, and financial loss if necessary, but you will not compromise your value of integrity. One compromise of integrity tears it completely. If you compromise your integrity, it stops being a value and merely becomes a convenient principle to be used for personal advantage whenever it seems to make sense. And the only way that you demonstrate what your values really are is through your actions. It's not what you say or what you intend or what you wish or hope, but only what you do that accurately demonstrates what you truly believe and consider to be important. In fact, you can determine what your values have been in the past by looking back at your previous actions and thinking about how you behaved when push came to shove, when you were under stress and you were forced to choose between alternatives. Every decision you make, every action you take, everything you do represents a choice between what you consider to be more important and what you consider to be less important, between what you value more and what you value less. The superior person, when forced to choose, always chooses the higher value over the lower value. For example, whenever you're confronted with a decision that involves money, you can clear your mind by putting the money aside temporarily and making the right choice, the choice that is consistent with your values, just as if no money was involved. You can say to yourself, "It's only money." Leave the money aside and say, "What is the right and fair thing to do in this situation if there was no money involved?" Once you've made the decision based on your values, based on what's right, rather than on finances, you can then bring the finances back into the equation, and the quality of your decision will be far better for all concerned. Wonderfully enough, you can choose new values to live by at any time, and you can commit to making them fixed parts of your life. You can decide to build your life around an inner core of excellent values, and then by practicing these values on every occasion, you will eventually internalize them and make them part of your thinking and acting, like breathing in and breathing out. You can actually make yourself into an extraordinary human being by setting high values and then by disciplining yourself to live by them on every occasion. There are some excellent questions that you can ask yourself to help you determine what your values are and what they should be. A good place to start is to ask yourself, what three people, living or dead, do I admire the most? Who are the people whose lives, examples, and teachings have had the greatest influence on your thinking and your beliefs, on what is right or wrong, on what is good or bad, what is admirable or unacceptable in personal behavior? When you think of these three people or anyone else that you look up to for any reason, ask yourself, why do I admire these people? Ask yourself, what values or qualities do they seem to have that I consider to be important and worthy of emulating? As I said before, there are three parts to your personality or your self-concept. First, there is your self-ideal. This is the person that you most admire and want to be like. Second, there is your self-image. This is the way you see yourself and think about yourself, which guides your performance and controls your behavior. Third of all, and perhaps the most important, is your self-esteem, the way you feel about yourself, how valuable and worthwhile you feel as a human being. Your self-ideal is the person you would like to be in the future, and your self-image is the person you see yourself as being in the present. Your self-esteem, how much you like and respect yourself, is largely determined by how much you feel that your current behaviors are consistent with the very best person you could possibly be. When you act consistent with your ideals, your self-image improves and your self-esteem goes up. You like yourself better and you perform better at everything you do. If you behave in a way that is inconsistent with your ideals, your self-image suffers and your self-esteem goes down. You don't like yourself as much. So one of your main jobs in life is to constantly strive to behave more consistently with the very best person you can possibly be. When you do this, you feel happier, more positive, more enthusiastic about yourself, your relationships, and everything you do. Your self-ideal is your internal mechanism that guides your conscience and your behavior. It's actually made up of the totality of all the qualities and values of other people that you've admired over the course of your life. For most people, this is probably an unconscious process. You begin to improve yourself in your life when you bring this unconscious process to a more conscious level of awareness, and then do some serious thinking about it. Here's an exercise for you. Write down the qualities that you admire most in other people. Think of your parents, your teachers, your coaches, the men and women you've read about over the years, and the ones that you look up to when you hear about them or read about them. Do you admire the qualities or values of courage, integrity, determination, honesty of expression, love, compassion, patience, sense of humor, forgiveness, persistence? What are the virtues, values, and qualities that you admire most in other people? Almost invariably, you will find that what you respect the most in others is an excellent indication of what you most aspire towards yourself. If you admire the courage and integrity of another person, it means that you want to develop the qualities of courage and integrity as part of your own character as well. If you admire energy and dynamism and success and achievement in other people, it means that you want to embody those characteristics in your own personality as well. And the more you admire and respect a certain quality in others, the more likely it is that you will begin to walk and talk and act and think just like those other people. You will become what you think about most of the time. You can live a great and wonderful life, but you have to make it a great life. It doesn't happen all by itself. And the hardest part of living a great life is to define what that means to you. It's to define the values and qualities you wish to live by and by which you wish to be known by others. A great life begins by your writing them down on paper and then beginning to think about how you can live consistent with your values and ideals every single day. Once you've written out your values, you organize them in order of priority. You write down your number one value, the value that will take precedence over all others in determining your choices and your behaviors. If you have to choose between living consistent with your number one value and any other value, you will always choose number one. For example, when I've done strategic planning for corporations, in every single case over the last 15 years, the executives of every corporation have selected integrity as their number one value. They recognized immediately that integrity is the value that guarantees that you'll live in a manner that is consistent with all the others. Integrity is something that cannot be compromised without severe penalties. Once you write down integrity and commit to it, everything else that you write down is much more likely to be adhered to in reality, and especially under pressure, than if you hadn't determined on this value in the first place. You then write down your second value, the value that takes precedence over all the others, except the first. Continue doing this until you've written down your five or six basic values. Now, you may have 100 different values, but you need just five or six as your core values. These then become the qualities around which you build your entire life. Once you've achieved clarity regarding your values, you can then organize all of your goals, objectives, and activities in such a way that they become extensions of your values and are consistent with them. You make sure that your inner life, your fundamental beliefs, are consistent with your outer life, your goals and activities. Your inner and outer lives should fit together like a hand in a glove. Remember, higher order values take precedence over lower order values. your number one value takes precedence over your number two value. Your number two value takes precedence over your number three value, and so on. In fact, your order of values can be even more important than the values themselves. For example, imagine that you have two people. They both have the same top three values. Their values are family, health, and career success. The first person, person A, has organized the values so that his number one value is family, his number two value is health, and his number three value is career success. The second person, person B, has the same three values, but has organized them so that their number one value is career success, their number two value is family, and their number three value is health. Here's the question. Would there be a difference between person A and person B? Would there be a small difference or a large difference? Would you be able to tell which of these two people you were talking to after you had spoken to one or the other for a couple of minutes? And the answer is, of course. There would be an extraordinary difference between the two people that would be immediately obvious and that would cause them to be two totally different personalities, even though they had the same values, because of the order in which they placed their values. Person A, who puts family ahead of health and career, would always choose his or her family and the needs of the most important people in his or her life over health and career success. Person B, on the other hand, who puts career success ahead of family and health, would always choose career success over family and health when push came to shove. It is only your actions, it is only what you do that is the true indicator of your real values, both to yourself and to others. You must give a lot of thought to the order of your values and then discipline yourself to stick to them no matter what. Once you've decided your basic positive values, it's very important to think through and determine your negative values as well. Positive values such as love, health, family, integrity, and so on are pretty easy to identify. But negative values are much more subtle and therefore much more dangerous. Just as you are motivated to make choices and engage in behaviors because of your positive values, the roots of all motivation, you're also motivated to make choices and avoid behaviors because of your negative values. Each of us has negative values that can often be so powerful that they can overwhelm and even take precedence over our positive values. For example, you will probably set integrity as one of your highest, if not your highest, value. The negative value that can compromise your integrity could be the fear of confrontation. Many people find that they accept treatment from people that makes them feel negative and angry inside rather than confronting the other person and insisting that the treatment be stopped. They are, in effect, compromising their emotional integrity, which is a positive value, because the fear of confrontation, a negative value, is much stronger in determining their behavior. The fear of poverty, for example, can be a negative value that interferes and takes precedence over the value of integrity. If a person becomes desperate for money, often he or she will do things that are inconsistent with any definition of integrity because the fear of not having enough money is stronger than the desire to live consistent with honesty and truth. Many people have the positive value of success and achievement. This is a good, healthy value that motivates a person to do the things that ensure higher levels of accomplishment. It's a very important value, and people think about it a lot. However, it's very common for this positive value to be negated or contradicted by the fear of failure. If the fear of failure is greater than the desire for success, whenever the person acts, he or she will be thinking primarily about the possibility of loss rather than the opportunity to gain. This negative value is why most people in America fail, not because they lack the ability, but because the fear of failure is greater than their desire for success and overrides it. You need to give serious thought to your values, and if you're not living consistently with your positive values every day, you need to think honestly about what negative values you might have that might be interfering with your taking the actions necessary to make your positive values and goals a reality. The very act of identifying your negative values, which everyone has, is the first step to eliminating them as influences in your life and in your success. Once you've determined your values, you can move on to the very important job of writing out your mission statement. Your mission statement is a description of the kind of person you want to be and the kind of life you want to live based on the positive values that you've identified. When we do a mission statement for a company, the company may have determined that its values are integrity, quality, service, profitability, and caring about people. The company would then write out a mission statement incorporating those values that says something like this: "We adhere to the highest standards of integrity in producing high-quality products which we service in an excellent fashion and earn good profits while respecting the needs of the individuals we work with inside and outside of the company." This mission statement incorporates the values and tells people both inside and outside the company what the company stands for, where the company is going, and how it is to be judged in terms of its success or failure. The key to your mission statement is that you write it in the present tense, as though it were already an objective statement of reality. You project yourself forward 5 or 10 years, and you imagine that this mission statement will be perfectly true in every respect 5 to 10 years in the future. It fits the description of the very best person that you could possibly be. It is purely qualitative, based on the values and principles by which you live. It describes the way you wish to be known to others honestly at some future time. By writing out this mission statement, which very few people ever do, you program it deep into your subconscious mind, and you begin the process of actually becoming the person that is consistent with the mission statement or description that you've designed for yourself. In effect, you are programming these instructions into your subconscious computer. You are programming your internal guidance mechanism and organizing your self-ideal so that you will be internally driven, often unconsciously, to talk and act consistent with the standards that you've set for yourself. The next step in strategic thinking, once you've determined your values and written your mission statement, is to decide what you want to do with your life on the outside. We call this the outer game of success, which follows naturally from the exercise of establishing your values and your mission, which we call the inner game of success. Take a pad of paper and sit down by yourself with plenty of time and write out your dream list. You create your dream list by imagining that you have no limitations whatsoever on what you can do or have or be in your life. Peak performers in every field engage in this exercise regularly. It's called blue sky thinking. You imagine that you have nothing above and around you but a great big blue sky, and that you can go in any direction and do anything that you really want to do. You let your mind run freely like a rapidly flowing river, and you think of everything you could ever want to accomplish as though everything and anything were possible for you. Imagine, for example, that you have no limitations of time or money. Imagine that you have no limitations of intelligence or education or opportunity. Imagine that you have no limitations with regard to assistance or resources. Imagine that everything you need will be available to you if only you can specify on paper exactly what it is you want. Once you've written down everything you can think of, and if you're married, do this exercise with your spouse, you then go to phase two. You go over the list and you divide it into 6 major categories. These categories are physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, financial, and social. By having goals in each of these areas, you create balance in your life. Your physical goals are the things that you wish to do with your body. They include not only physical health and longevity, how long you want to live, but the various activities you'd like to engage in, like climbing a mountain, sailing a boat, skydiving, playing golf, and maybe becoming excellent at tennis. You write down every single physical activity or aspect of your physical life that you think you'd enjoy and which would enhance your life in some way. Don't worry about how possible any one of these activities is for the moment. You can evaluate them and set priorities on them later. With regard to your mental or intellectual goals, you make a list of all the things you'd like to learn and understand in the course of your life. What languages would you like to learn? What subjects would you like to study? Where would you like to go, and what would you like to participate in that could enrich you and give you a higher quality of mental life? What are the skills that you need to develop? You may decide that you wish to take additional college courses or read additional books, listen to additional audio tapes, and even become knowledgeable about a particular field of endeavor. Just write everything down without limitations. Your emotional goals will refer to the quality of the relationships that you want to have with the most important people in your life. Describe the quality of the relationship you wish to have with your spouse or mate. What kind of relationship would you like to have with your children? How would you like to get along with your friends and coworkers? How would you like to feel about yourself on an ongoing basis? Would you like to enjoy high levels of self-esteem and self-respect? Set that as a goal, and then, later, you'll begin to make plans to ensure that you accomplish that goal in the shortest period of time. Your spiritual goals have to do not only with your religious beliefs, but with the quality of your inner life. The highest level of spiritual development is for you to reach a feeling of oneness and peace with the universe. You can call the universe whatever you like, but the spiritual goal of peace of mind and inner contentment has been the motivating influence behind the lives and teachings of all the great mystics and religious thinkers throughout the ages. What are your spiritual goals? What are your goals for inner development and the evolution of your consciousness to higher levels of understanding and inner peace? Your financial and career goals are essential to the accomplishment of everything else. It is your ability to earn the money that you need that will enable you to get most of the other things that you want in life. You're probably capable right now of earning far more than you're presently earning. The starting point of increasing your income is to sit down with that pad of paper and write out how much you want to earn and then begin making a plan for its accomplishment. With regard to financial and career goals, you should look around and ask yourself, who else is earning the kind of money I desire? What is he or she doing differently from me? The sixth type of goals are social goals. These are your goals for making a contribution to the society and to the community in which you live. Superior men and women are always aware that they have a greater obligation to the common good. When you begin achieving success in your career and your business life, you will find yourself naturally drawn toward giving something back, toward making a contribution that somehow uplifts and improves the lives of others. Once you have all your goals written out, and sometimes you'll end up with 100 or more, you then begin to sort them out and to organize them by priority. The simplest method of all is what we call the ABC method. As you go down your list of goals, you write an A next to every goal that's really important and exciting to you. You write a B next to every goal that you would like to accomplish, but which is not as important as your A goals. You then write a C next to every goal that you wrote down, which, in retrospect, is not as important to you as other things might be in that area. You then take all of your A goals under each category and transfer them to a clean sheet of paper. For instance, at the top of one sheet of paper, you would write financial and career goals. Then you would make a list of all the A financial and career goals that you'd identified from your master list. You then go down and set priorities on each of your financial goals by writing A1 next to the most important and A2 next to the second most important and A3 next to the third most important and so on. Do this with each of your other goal categories until you have your six areas of life clearly identified with all of your A goals organized in order of priority. Once you've done this, you will have begun to move toward peak performance. You will have completed an exercise that more than 99% of people never complete in their entire lives. You will have begun the process of programming your subconscious mind and activating the law of attraction. Remarkable things will begin to happen to you at a very rapid rate. Many of my seminar graduates have said that after completing this exercise, their life began to move forward so fast it was scary. This will happen to you in a very short period of time if you have the discipline to engage in strategic thinking and planning to perform this exercise as I have described. And we'll go into this process of goal setting in even greater depth in the next session. When setting goals for any area of your life, one of the most important questions you ask yourself is, what are my unique strengths? What is it that you do easily and well that seems to be difficult for other people? Looking back over the various jobs and careers and activities that you've engaged in, what have been the things that you did with the greatest pleasure and the greatest confidence? What skills, talents, and abilities have accounted for most of your success in life to date? It's been said that luck is when preparedness meets opportunity. We can also say that success is when goals meet natural talents and abilities. you will be successful to the degree to which you can identify what it is that you do better than anyone else, and then set goals to accomplish things in that area. A basic principle of this entire program on personal achievement is that there are two aspects of success: being and doing. You know that before you can do something, you must first be something. A key question that you must ask continually is, what kind of a person do I have to become to deserve the kind of success that I desire? Because of the law of sowing and reaping, you get not what you want in life, but only what you deserve. You get only what you have paid for in full in terms of the person that you have become and the things that you have done. Thinking about the kind of person you need to be to gain and keep the kind of success that you desire is an important part of strategic thinking. This is why we've placed so much emphasis on values, on both selecting them and on organizing them by priority in your life. Strategic thinking is really thinking about what you're going to have to do minute by minute to live consistent with the highest values and principles that you aspire to. This, more than anything else, will determine whether you achieve your internal and external goals. Here are two questions that have been very helpful to me in the area of strategic thinking. You should ask them of yourself continually. They are, first, what am I trying to do? And second, how am I trying to do it? When you make a plan or a blueprint for your life in any of the six areas, you will find that your plans have defects in them. Defects will show up when your plans fail to work as you had expected. This is normal and natural. What you do when this happens is you go back to the drawing board and rework your plans. You continue rewriting them until you finally have plans that work the way you want them to. You ask, what am I trying to do, and how am I trying to do it? A mistake that many people make is that they design a plan based on the best information they have, and then they try to make that plan work without being flexible enough to change when they run into roadblocks and obstacles. Now, I'm not saying that you should quit when you run into difficulties. I'm just saying that you should be able to change the plans when your actual experience shows that things are not working out as you had expected. Strategic thinking requires that you always be thinking in terms of how to deploy yourself as a resource more effectively. You keep your vision on the person you want to become and on the goals you want to achieve. You keep writing and rewriting plans and blueprints until they're flawless. You keep your inner life consistent with the person that you want to be, and you keep your outer life activities consistent with the things you want to achieve. Your ability to think strategically is the first part of the master skill of success. Next to it, all else is commentary. In the next session, you will learn how to apply your strategic thinking abilities to move forward and accomplish more than you ever have before. The ability to set goals and make plans for their accomplishment is the master skill of success. Developing this skill to the highest possible degree will do more to ensure your success than anything else you could ever learn. Intense goal orientation is an essential characteristic of all high-achieving men and women in every study, in every field. It's not possible to realize even a fraction of your potential until you have learned how to set and achieve goals as normally and as naturally as you brush your teeth or comb your hair in the morning. Goals are the fuel in the furnace of achievement. A person without goals is like a ship without a rudder, drifting aimlessly and always in danger of ending up on the rocks. A person with goals is like a ship with a rudder, a map, a compass, and a destination, sailing straight and true toward a port of his or her own choosing. Thomas Carlyle wrote that a man with a half volition goes back and forth and makes no progress on even the smoothest road, whereas a person with a full volition moves ahead steadily no matter how difficult the path. Human beings are goal-centered organisms. You are engineered mentally to move progressively and successively from one goal to the other, and you're never really happy unless and until you are moving toward the accomplishment of a worthy objective. Your brain has within it a cybernetic, goal-seeking mechanism that guides and directs you unerringly over time toward the accomplishment of your goals. In reality, goal achieving seems to take place much as the result of a natural process. It's the goal setting in the first place that seems to be the most difficult. It's a truism that each of us is achieving the goals we have set. You are where you are and what you are because you have decided to be there. Your thoughts, your actions, and your behaviors have gotten you to your present position in life, and they could have brought you to no other place, rightly considered. If your goal is to get through the day and get home and watch television, you will probably achieve that goal. If your goal is to be fit and healthy and to live a long life, then you'll achieve that too. And if your goal is to be financially independent or even wealthy, if that is truly your goal, then there is nothing that can stop you from reaching it sooner or later. Your only limitation is how badly you want it. Built into your brain is both a success mechanism and a failure mechanism. Your failure mechanism is the natural tendency toward the path of least resistance, the impulse toward immediate gratification with little or no concern for the long-term consequences of your actions. Your failure mechanism operates automatically 24 hours per day. Every minute, every hour, it ticks away, and most people allow their desire for what is fun and easy and convenient to determine all of their decisions and their actions. However, you also have a success mechanism built into your brain. Your success mechanism overrides your failure mechanism, and your success mechanism is triggered by a goal. The bigger your goal and the more intensely you desire it, the more likely you will be to exert your powers of self-discipline and willpower to make you do the things that you need to do to achieve your goal. After a career of 50 years, during which he personally worked with and trained more than 20,000 salespeople, Elmer Letterman concluded that the one quality that would most predict success was what he called intensity of purpose. Taking any two people with the same relative levels of intelligence, background, education, and experience, the one with the greatest intensity of purpose would always be the most successful. The famous oil billionaire H.L. Hunt went bankrupt raising cotton in Arkansas as a young man. He then moved to Texas, won an oil lease and a poker game, and went on to build a fortune of several $1 billion and to become one of the world's richest men. He was once asked his formula for success. He said that in America, you only needed two things to be successful. First, he said, decide exactly what it is you want. Most people never do that. Second, determine the price you're going to have to pay to get it, and then resolve to pay that price. The great weakness for most people is that even if they have some idea of what they want, they've never sat down and thought through what it will take to get it, and whether or not they're willing to pay that price. We only know two things for sure about the price of success. First, in order to get the success you desire, however you define it, you must pay the price in full. You must sow before you reap, and you may have to work a long time before you harvest the crop. Second, you have to pay the full price in advance. Success is not like sitting down in a restaurant where you can pay the bill after you've enjoyed the dinner. The success that you desire requires payment in full, in advance, every single time. And how can you tell if you've paid the full price of success? That's easy. When you've paid the full price, the success will be there in front of you for all to see, by law, not by chance. When you've sown, you will reap. Cause and effect, action and reaction. We explained about several mental laws in the first part of this program. Sometimes people are unsure about how they're going to remember to use and apply all of these laws. Well, it's easy. When you have a clearly defined goal, the greatest enemy of success, as we've said, is the comfort zone. The tendency to get stuck in a rut and then to resist all change, even positive change, that would force you out of your comfort zone. We all have a natural tendency to fear and to avoid change. We want things to stay the same, but to get better too. However, all growth, all progress, all advancement requires change. And in spite of anything that we do, life never goes on the same way for very long. It's always changing in one direction or another. Things are either improving or deteriorating. but they never stay the same. Now, the law of control says that you feel positive about yourself to the degree to which you feel you're in control of your own life. The first benefit of goal setting is that goals allow you to control the direction of change in your life and thereby assure that change is predominantly positive and self-determined. No one fears a change that represents an improvement. With clear goals, backed by detailed plans of accomplishment, you take full control over your life and move boldly forward in the direction of positive change. The law of cause and effect says that for every effect in your life, there's a specific cause. Goals are a cause. Achievement is an effect. You sow goals and you reap results. Goals begin as thoughts or causes and manifest themselves as conditions or effects. The primary cause of success in life is the ability to set and achieve goals. That's why people who do not have goals are doomed forever to work for those who do. You either work to achieve your own goals or you work to achieve someone else's goals. You trigger the law of belief by intensely believing that you will achieve your goals and by taking actions consistent with those beliefs. Your beliefs or goals eventually become your reality. You trigger the law of expectations by confidently expecting that everything that is happening, positive or negative, is moving you toward the realization of your goals. You look for something positive or beneficial in every event, and you soon get what you expect. You activate the law of attraction by thinking continually about your goals. With your goals as your dominant thoughts, you invariably begin to attract into your life people and circumstances in harmony with achieving those goals. The law of correspondence says that your outer world will correspond with your inner world. When your inner world is dominated by thoughts and plans of how to achieve the things that are important to you, your outer world of manifestation and effect will soon mirror your inner world of goals and plans. The law of subconscious activity says that whatever thoughts you hold in your conscious mind, your subconscious mind goes to work to bring into your reality. When you think about your goals, more and more of your subconscious computing capability is allocated toward making your words and actions fit a pattern consistent with what you want to achieve. The law of concentration says that whatever you dwell upon grows. What do you dwell upon continually? Your goals. The law of substitution says that you can substitute a positive thought for a negative one. What positive thought do you use to substitute for negative thoughts or experiences? Your goals. Whenever something goes wrong, think about your goals. Whenever you have a bad day, think about your goals. The very thought of something that you want to accomplish in the future is inherently positive and uplifting. It's impossible to think about your goals continually and be anything else but optimistic and highly motivated. The law of habit says that almost everything we do is the result of our habits, either good or bad. What new habits do you want to form? You want to form the habit of regularly and systematically setting and resetting and reviewing your goals every single day. The law of practice says that whatever you practice over and over again, often enough, becomes a new habit. By using the law of practice, you will very soon develop the lifelong habit of perpetual goal setting and goal achieving. When you begin using all these mental laws behind a clearly defined purpose to which you're totally committed, you become an unstoppable powerhouse of mental and physical energy that will not be denied. With clear, specific goals, you can develop and use all of your mental powers and accomplish more in the next few years than most people accomplish in a whole lifetime. With everything that we know about strategic thinking and goal setting, you think that everybody would be doing it. You've probably been told, perhaps for years, that you have to have goals and you have to be working towards your goals on a regular basis. Yet the sad fact is that very few people have goals at all. Less than 3% of the population have written goals. Fewer than 1% of the population read and review their goals on a regular basis. And of course, almost everyone else works for the 3% who are clear about what they want. Many people have attended seminars, read books, and listened to tapes on goal setting. And yet if you ask them if they have clear written goals and plans for their accomplishment, they will confess sheepishly that they don't. They know they're supposed to have goals and they intend to set some goals fairly soon, but they just haven't gotten around to it yet. When I began studying and applying these principles of success, I got such extraordinary results that I eagerly shared this information with anyone who would listen. That's how I began speaking in public and doing seminars. However, I was constantly amazed at how enthusiastically people would agree with me and then go away. The first reason people don't set goals is that they are simply not serious. They're talkers instead of doers. They want to be more successful, they want to improve their lives, but they are not willing to make the necessary efforts. They don't have the fire in the belly that translates into a burning desire to make something of themselves, to make their lives bigger and better and more exciting. The only way that you can tell what a person really believes is by his actions, not his words. It's not what you say or what you intend or what you wish or hope or pray for, but only what you do that counts. Your true values and beliefs are only and always expressed in your actions. One person who will take action is worth 10 brilliant talkers who end up doing nothing. I get countless phone calls and letters and proposals from all kinds of people with all kinds of ideas during the course of a year. But the only ones who impress me or anyone else are the ones who actually do something. Remember, only action is action, and nothing else counts for much. Don't tell people what you're going to do. Show them. The second reason that people don't set goals is because they have not yet accepted responsibility for their lives. I used to think that goals were the starting point of success until I realized that, in fact, until a person accepts that he is fully responsible for his life and for everything that happens, he will not even take the first step toward goal setting. The irresponsible person is the person who is still waiting for real life to begin. They use up all their potential creative energy making elaborate excuses for their failure to make progress, and then they buy lottery tickets and go home and watch television. The third reason people don't set goals is because of the terribly destructive effects of guilt on the personality. A person who is so low mentally and emotionally that they have to look up to see bottom is not the kind of person who can confidently and optimistically set goals for the next few years. A person who has been raised in a negative environment, leaving him or her with feelings of undeservingness and the attitude of, what's the use, is not really capable of goal setting. If you meet a person like this, you should realize that they are very hard to help. The fourth reason people don't set goals is because they don't realize the importance of goals. If you're raised in a household where your parents don't have goals and where the setting and achieving of goals is not a regular family discussion topic, you can reach adulthood without even knowing that there are such things as goals outside of sports. I had personally never even heard of goals and goal setting until I was 23 years old and I stumbled across a copy of Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. If you move in a social circle where people don't have clearly defined goals toward which they're working on a regular basis, it'll be easy for you to assume that goals are not a particularly important part of life. And since 80% of the people around you are going nowhere, if you're not careful, you'll end up drifting with the crowd, following the followers, and going nowhere as well. If people knew that all their hopes and dreams and plans for the future, all their aspirations and ambitions are dependent upon their ability and their willingness to set goals, if people realized how important goals are to a happy, successful life, I think far more people would have goals than they do today. The fifth reason people don't set goals is because they don't know how. You can complete an advanced university degree in our society, the equivalent of 15 or 16 or 17 years of education, and never once receive 1 hour's worth of instruction on goal setting, even though goal setting is more important than any other single subject that you could ever learn in assuring your long-term happiness. An even worse mistake is to assume that you already know how to set goals. A person who already assumes that he or she knows a critical skill, when in reality his or her understanding of it is rudimentary at best, is in great danger of failing at life. I've been studying goal setting and practicing goal setting techniques for more than 20 years. I've taught countless thousands of men and women how to set goals for their lives, and I've done strategic planning and goal setting for billion-dollar corporations. I don't know anyone who has studied the subject and applied it as thoroughly as I have, and even I still feel that I have a lot to learn. If a person really has goal setting down cold, he or she is probably either very rich or very happy, or both. The sixth reason people don't set goals is quite simply the fear of rejection, or the fear of criticism. From the time we were children, we have had our dreams and fantasies and ideas slapped down by the criticism and laughter of others. Maybe our parents didn't want us to get our hopes up or to be disappointed, so they quickly pointed out to us all the reasons why we wouldn't be able to achieve our goals. Our siblings and friends might have laughed at us and ridiculed us for thinking about being someone or doing something far beyond what they had accomplished. Children are not dumb. They soon learn that if you want to get along, you go along. Over time, an intelligent child living under these conditions gradually stops coming up with new ideas and new dreams and new goals. It's just not worth the trouble. Here's the solution to this fear of criticism or sounding foolish. Keep your goals confidential. All excellent goal setters finally learn to keep their goals to themselves. Don't tell anybody. No one can laugh at you or criticize you if they don't know what your goals are. The only exceptions to this rule are that you should tell the people, such as your boss or your spouse, whose help you'll need to achieve your goals, and you should also share your goals with other goal-oriented people. By the way, a good policy is to encourage everyone you speak to who tells you about a goal they have. Tell them to go for it. Tell them you can do it. Encouraging others motivates you too. It's one of the best applications of the law of sowing and reaping. If you would like others to encourage you, take every opportunity to encourage them. The seventh reason, and the most important reason that people don't set goals, is the fear of failure. The fear of failure is the greatest single obstacle to success in adult life. It is what keeps people in their comfort zones, keeping their heads down and playing it safe as the years speed by. The fear of failure is expressed in the attitude of, "I can't, I can't, I can't." It's learned in early childhood as the result of destructive criticism and punishment for doing things your parents disapproved of. This fear does more to paralyze hope and kill ambition than any other negative emotion in the human experience. The major reason people fear failure is because most people don't understand the role of failure in achieving success. The rule is simply this: it's impossible to succeed without failing. Failure is an indispensable prerequisite for success. The greatest failures in human history have also been the greatest successes. In the same year that Babe Ruth was the home run king of baseball, he also struck out more than any other player. Success is a numbers game. There's a direct relationship between the number of things that you try and your probability of ultimately succeeding. Even if you were the worst baseball player in the American League, if you swung with all your heart at every ball that came over the plate, the law of probability says that you must eventually get a hit and that you will finally get a home run. The key is to swing with all your might and to keep swinging and not worry about striking out occasionally. Napoleon Hill said, "Within every adversity is the seed of an equal or greater opportunity or advantage." The way to deal with temporary failure is to seek within every setback for the valuable lesson that you can learn. Become an inverse paranoid. Allow yourself to become convinced that everything that's happening to you is moving you toward the achievement of your goal, even when it seems to be moving you away. Most great successes were preceded by great failures. Decide in advance to take every setback as a spur to greater effort, especially in business and sales, knowing that you're getting closer and closer to success with every experience. Look upon temporary defeat as a signpost that says, "Stop, go this way or that way instead." A key quality of leaders in one 5-year study was that they never used words like failure or defeat. Instead, they used words like valuable learning experiences or temporary glitches. Vince Lombardi had the right spirit. After a game in which the Green Bay Packers were defeated, one of the reporters asked Lombardi how he felt about losing. Lombardi replied, "We didn't lose. We just ran out of time." You can overcome the fear of failure, the major reason why people don't succeed, by accepting temporary failure and temporary setbacks as an inevitable part of your ultimate success. Based on strategic thinking, goal setting can be a powerful, even a life-changing experience if you do it properly. And there are five basic principles of goal setting that are essential for high achievement. Principle number one is the principle of congruency. What this means is that in order for you to perform at your best, your goals and your values must fit together like a hand in a glove. Your values represent your deepest convictions about what is right and wrong, what is good and bad, and what is important and meaningful to you. High performance and high self-esteem only happen when what you're doing, your goals, and what you believe to be important, your values, are in complete harmony. The second principle of goal setting is called your area of excellence. We know that each person has the capacity to be excellent at something, maybe many things. And we know that you can only achieve your full potential by finding your area of excellence and then by developing your talents in that area. Emmett Fox calls this your heart's desire. You'll never be happy or satisfied until you find it and commit your life to it. It's the one thing that you are uniquely capable of doing in an excellent fashion. Your area of excellence may change as your career evolves, but all truly successful men and women are those who have found their areas of excellence and who have then put their whole hearts into becoming outstanding at their chosen fields. The third principle of goal setting is called the Acres of Diamonds concept. Acres of Diamonds was the title of a talk by a minister named Russell Conwell. The talk became so popular that he was eventually asked to give it more than 5,000 times, word for word. The essence of the Acres of Diamonds story is that the opportunity you're looking for probably lies right under your own feet, right where you are, right now. In the story, an old African farmer became very excited one day upon hearing of men who had gone off into Africa and discovered diamond mines and become fabulously wealthy. He decided to sell off his farm, organize a caravan, and head into the vastness of Africa to find diamonds and to crown his life with fabulous wealth. For many years, he searched the vast African continent for diamonds. Eventually, he ran out of money, and finally, alone in a fit of despair, he threw himself into the ocean and drowned. Meanwhile, back on the farm that he had sold, the new farmer was out watering a donkey one day in a stream that cut across the farm. He found a strange stone that threw off light in a remarkable way, and he took it into the house and thought no more of it. Some months later, a merchant traveling on business stopped for the night at the farm. When he saw the stone, he grew very excited, and he asked if the old farmer had finally returned. No, the old farmer had never been seen again, but why was he so excited? The merchant picked up the stone and said, "This is a diamond of great price and value." The new farmer was skeptical, but the merchant insisted that he show him where he had found the diamond. They went out on the farm to where the farmer had been watering the donkey, and as they looked around, they found another, and another, and then another. It turned out that the whole farm was covered with acres of diamonds. The old farmer had gone off into Africa seeking for diamonds without ever looking under his own feet. Likewise, your acres of diamonds probably lie under your own feet, but they're probably disguised as hard work. It's been said that opportunities come dressed in work clothes. Your acres of diamonds probably lie in your own talents, your interests, your education, your background and experience, your industry, your city, your contacts. Your acres of diamonds probably lie under your own feet if you will take the time to go to work on them. The fourth principle for success in goal setting is the principle of balance. The principle of balance says that you need a variety of goals in the six critical areas of life in order to perform at your best. Just like a wheel on an automobile must be balanced for it to go around smoothly, in order for your life to proceed smoothly, you must have your goals in balance as well. You need family and personal goals. You need physical and health goals. You need mental and intellectual goals, goals for study and personal development. You need career and work goals. You need financial and material goals. Finally, you need spiritual goals, goals aimed at inner development and higher understanding. To maintain balance, you need two or three goals in each area, a total of 12 to 18 goals in all. This kind of balance will enable you to be working on something important to you all the time. When you're not working on your job, you can be spending time with your family. When you're not developing yourself physically, you can be working on personal and professional development. When you're not engaging in meditation, contemplation, and other inner development work, you can be working on tangible, material goals. The fifth principle of goal setting is your major definite purpose or mission statement for your life. Your major definite purpose is your number one goal, the goal that is more important to you than the accomplishment of any other single goal or objective at this time. You may have a variety of goals, but you can only have one major definite purpose. The failure to choose an overarching, dominating, major goal is the primary reason for diffusion of effort, wasting of time, and the failure to advance. The way you choose your major definite purpose is by analyzing and asking, which goal, if I accomplish it, would do the most to help me achieve all my other goals? Usually, this is a financial goal, but sometimes it can be a health or relationship goal instead. The selection of your major definite purpose is the starting point of all great success and achievement. This then becomes your mission, the organizing principle for all your other activities. Your major definite purpose becomes the catalyst that activates the laws of belief, attraction, and correspondence. The person with an exciting major goal starts to make rapid progress in spite of all obstacles and limitations. Here are the seven main goal-setting questions that you can ask and answer over and over again. Question number one, what are your five most important values in life right now? This question is to help you clarify what is really important to you and, by extension, what is less important or unimportant. Once you've identified the five most important values in life to you, organize them in order of priority from number one, the most important, through to number five. Your choice of values comes before setting your goals. Since you live from the inner to the outer, and your values define your innermost convictions, clarity concerning your values enables you to select goals that are consistent with what's really important to you. Question number two is, what are your three most important goals in life right now? Write the answer to this question within 30 seconds. This is called the quick list method. When you only have 30 seconds to write your three most important goals or problems, your subconscious mind sorts them out quickly and they just pop into your conscious mind. In 30 seconds, your answers will be as accurate as if you had 30 minutes. Question number three. What would you do and how would you spend your time if you learned today that you only had 6 months to live? This is another value question to help you clarify what you really care about, and especially who you really care about. Someone once said that you're not ready to live until you know what you would do if you only had 1 hour left on Earth. What would you do? Write it down. Question number four is, what would you do? How would you change your life if you won $1 million cash, tax-free, tomorrow? What would you do differently? What would you buy? What would you start doing or stop doing? Imagine that you only have 2 or 3 minutes to write the answer, and you'll only be able to do or have what you have written. This is really a question to help you decide what you'd do if you had all the time and money you need, if you had no fear of failure. Question number five. What have you always wanted to do but been afraid to attempt? What have you always wished that you could do but something has held you back? This question helps you see where your fears could be blocking you from doing what you really want to do. Question number six. What do you most enjoy doing in the whole world? What sort of activities give you your greatest feeling of self-esteem and satisfaction? This is another values question that may indicate where you should explore to find your heart's desire. Put another way, what do you really love to do? Question number seven, and perhaps this is the most important. Imagine that a genie appeared with a magic wand and granted you one wish. The genie guarantees that you will be absolutely, completely successful in any one thing that you attempt to do, big or small, short or long term. Here, then, is the question. What one great thing would you dare to dream if you knew you could not fail? If you were absolutely guaranteed of success in any one thing, big or small, short or long term, what one exciting goal would you set for yourself? Whatever you wrote as an answer to any of these questions, including the question, what one great thing would you dare to dream if you knew you could not fail, you can be, have, or do. The very fact that you could write it down means that you can achieve it. Once you've identified what it is you want, the only question you have to answer is, do I want it badly enough, and am I willing to pay the price? Now that you know the questions to ask yourself, here is an action exercise for you. Take a few minutes with a pad and write out the answers to each of these questions. Once you have your answers on paper, go over them and select just one as your major definite purpose in life right now. By doing this, you will have moved yourself into the top 3%. You will have established a written set of goals for yourself. You are now ready to make a plan and move ahead rapidly in your life. And that's what we'll talk about in the next session.